Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Everyone listening to this tape is a leader, like it or not. One moment you're a family leader, the next a community leader, and most assuredly, you will be viewed as a leader in your business. It's not a matter of whether you lead, it's a matter of how well you lead. This month, by popular demand, Larry Wingan has returned to share 31 principles to become a better leader. Larry is an internationally recognized speaker and author of several books and audio-video learning systems. Larry's philosophy is expect the best, be prepared for the worst, and celebrate it all. Now sit back and listen to some great ideas on how to become a more effective leader.
Now it's time to talk about 31 principles to be a better leader. Leadership. Number one, let's talk about leadership. What are the various definitions of leadership? I'm going to give you the definitions of several people, as well as the definition from the American Heritage Dictionary, which says a person who leads other along a way, or a guide. Dr. Deming says the aim of leadership should be to help people and equipment and gadgets do a better job. Patton said leadership is inspiring confidence in others. Kissinger said the task of the leader is to get his people from where they are to where they have not been. Dwight Eisenhower said leadership is the ability to decide what is to be done and then to get others to want to do it. And Unknown said the goal of most leaders is to make people think highly of the leader, but the goal of the outstanding leader is to make people think highly of themselves. Number two, you have to take responsibility because leaders are responsible. You're responsible for your own style of leadership. You're responsible for your team. You're responsible for results, for the results you and your team have achieved up until now, and responsible for the results they will achieve in the future. And you must take responsibility for that. It doesn't do any good to point the finger of blame elsewhere because, as the leader, it is up to you. And you can't blame circumstances. No one cares about circumstances. Things like the economy and your geographic area, those just don't matter. You can't blame your employees either, because you're responsible for your employees and their production. You can't even blame the company or any policy or procedure. You can't blame anything or anyone, because you are the leader. And if you're going to be a successful leader, you must take responsibility. Responsibility is really where it starts and where it ends, because you are responsible. As Napoleon said, there are no bad soldiers, only bad officers. That's how it works in business, too, with leadership. Number three, accept accountability. Accountability is somewhat different than responsibility. Accountability goes beyond responsibility and says that you're not only responsible for your team and its results, but you are willing to be held accountable for them. How willing are you to be held accountable for what goes on in your organization? Now, this is a tough one. There are many leaders and managers with the title and the responsibility who are ineffective in the workplace because they aren't willing to be held accountable. Now, if you're that way, then you need to get out of your leadership role right now. You must be willing to be accountable, to be held accountable for what happens. So be proud to stand for who and what you represent. This means that if it all goes wrong, they will come to you and you will stand tall and take it willingly. Number four, assessment time. I know we've only had three principles, and it's already time to assess how you're doing as a leader. So how are you doing as a leader? What kind of a leader are you? Do you often point the finger of blame somewhere else? Do you shirk responsibility when things get tough? Are you proud enough of the results of you and your team to be held accountable? Now, I know all of these are tough questions, but they must be answered. You have to take some time to evaluate your skills and your style and your willingness. Ask for input from a trusted colleague. Ask for input from your subordinates. Ask for input from your boss. Have them tell you what they think a good leader must be and do. Then have them tell you what your strong and weak points are against their definition of what leadership really is. Use this information to write out an assessment of your current leadership abilities. This will provide the basis for your improvement. As Milton Glass said, if he has the qualities of a boss, he will thrive. If he doesn't, no matter what he does, he is not going to thrive. You must assess what your qualities are and begin there to improve. Number five. It's time to study. You've done your assessment. You know what you need to learn at this point, or you should have some idea. But it's time to read some books. I'm going to give you right now a list of the books that I believe are some of the very best on leadership. First, by W. Stephen Brown, 13 Fatal Errors Managers Make and How You Can Avoid Them. Warren Bennis, on Becoming a Leader. Michael LaBeouf, The Greatest Management Principle in the World. Alan Loy McGinnis, Bringing Out the Best in People. Buck Rogers, Getting the Best Out of Yourself and Others. And Max Dupree, Leadership is an Art. I suggest you go out and buy those books. There's only a half dozen there. Surely you could invest in a half dozen books to improve the quality of your leadership skills. Number six, the physical environment. The physical space that you and your team occupy will affect your results. If you have a sloppy environment, you will have sloppy results. Your office and your workplace should be a monument to your success, and I don't care what kind of place you work in. You can work in a garage. You can work in a fast food restaurant. You can work in a warehouse. It doesn't have to be an office environment, and your environment will be reflected in the kind of results you get. So make it look as good as you can afford for it to look. Nothing extravagant is necessary unless you can truly afford it. I've made dumps look wonderful with a coat of fresh paint and a few nice pictures, but I have learned that people perform better when they feel good about their surroundings. First of all, just keep your area clean. Keep your desk clean. Keep your office clean. It is impossible for you to tell your group to get organized when you can't see the top of your desk. And don't tell me something stupid like, that's how I work best. It is not how you work best. Everyone works better with an organized system of paperwork and projects. So clean up your desk and clean up your office. Set an example for others to follow. Then insist on it. Inspect it. You don't have to be a neat freak, but you do have to insist on an organized work area. Number seven, the atmosphere. Look around you. What kind of atmosphere does your workplace have? Your office and your workplace, well, it does have an atmosphere, a feeling that will determine how people perform. Are people excited, bored, scared, quiet, serious, fun-loving? The atmosphere within your office area will have an impact on all who enter, especially your customers. And the atmosphere within your area is your responsibility. So you must create an atmosphere of enthusiasm and positiveness where people enjoy what they do, an atmosphere where mediocrity will not be accepted and where people accept only the best from themselves and each other, an atmosphere that this is a place where things get done. I believe that you should create an atmosphere that this is a sacred place. Everyone understands what a sacred place is. There are certain areas that we just hold in our mind, physical locations, might be a church, a synagogue, whatever, that when you walk in that place, you know that you must act differently. I think that your office must be a sacred place where everyone only speaks well of each other and of the customer. Have you ever walked in to get your driver's license renewed? Do you just walk in and say, this is not going to be an easy experience? You just have that feeling. Of course you do. You've been in places like that. Normally they're government buildings. But your office has that same sort of a feeling that it gives off, whether this is a place where things get done, or this is a place where these people are enjoying themselves, or this is a place where I feel comfortable, or this is a place where it's not going to be easy to get waited on, to get help. You are in control of the atmosphere within your workplace. Number 8, you set the pace. You're the leader. Others will follow your example. Others will follow your lead. If you show up late, then you have sent the signal that it's not important to be on time. If you abuse the company expense account, well, you ought to be fired. But you're also saying it's okay to steal from your company. If you talk bad about your customers, and this one is important, then you can bet your employees will talk bad about their customers. Why would you ever want to talk bad about the person who has the money that keeps your business alive? Don't do that, and don't tolerate it in others. And if you talk bad about people in other departments or other departments in general, then don't be surprised when your employees do the very same thing. If you talk bad about the boss, then it's obviously fine for them to talk bad about the boss, and you're the boss. Your people will use you as an example for their behavior and their attitude. So set a good example. Speak well of others, especially the customer. Have good work habits, one that others will want to emulate. Be positive. Be enthusiastic. Be the kind of employee that you want to have. As Sergeant Preston of the Yukon said, "The speed of the leader determines the speed of the pack." Number 9, the right group of people. You know, that's really the biggest challenge, putting together the right group of people. If you're starting fresh, you've got a much better chance, but sometimes you just have to work with what you've got. So you must remember this about people. Attitude is more important than skill. Technical skills and abilities can be trained. Hire people for attitude first and train the rest. Some people have the words of a winner and the actions of a loser. So you do have to be careful. They can fool you. But if they have the words of a winner and the actions of a loser, don't be fooled for long, because those people are losers, regardless of what they say and how they say it. Now, these people are known as articulate incompetents. Be aware of those kind of people. As Richard Sloma says, people are a firm's most important asset. If you have an excellent product but only mediocre people, your results will still be only mediocre. Number 10, expectations. Most problems in business could be solved prior to their happening if we would just lay out expectations clearly in advance. People want two things from any relationship. First, they want to know what is expected from them. Second, they want to know what they can expect from you. I believe most problems come when expectations are undefined or not explained clearly in advance, and they're given no time frames. They also come when we do not communicate our expectations effectively. Louis Brandeis said 9/10 of the serious controversies which arise in life result from misunderstanding. Let there be no misunderstandings in what is expected from people and what they can expect from you. Number 11. Let's talk about a few ways to communicate expectations. There are lots of ways. First of all, you could just have a job description. I'm amazed a lot of employees don't have a job description. And that's one of the best ways to communicate what your expectations are. However, even those with a job description, well, they're usually only covered when the employee is hired and initialed and stuck back in some file. And every once in a while, they might be covered in a review or when the employee has committed some infraction, when they've messed up. Why would you only want to remind employee what is expected of them after they have disappointed you? That's not fair. You can also have periodic reviews to communicate expectations. Those are excellent ways to update and get feedback on what is expected from others. They can be on a regular basis or they can be spontaneous. They can even be on a project basis. This is what we expect on this project or on this task. Group meetings are also a good way to cover expectations, but be careful here. Meetings are normally a big waste of time. They're too frequent, they're poorly planned, and even more importantly, they are poorly executed. Number 12, time frames. Start communicating in terms of when you want things to happen. A leader frequently communicates what needs to happen, but leaves off the time frame that puts the project into a perspective of accomplishment. So it's left up to the employee to interpret whether it's a wouldn't it be nice to get this done, or a this ought to be done, or I have to get this done. Because if the time frame is not clearly stated, the type of leadership style will imply a time frame. For example, if you have a very powerful leadership style, the employee automatically thinks that your request is a have to get done, when it really might only be, wouldn't it be nice to have this done? A moderate leadership style can imply that I'd appreciate you doing this when you get around to it, when actually it was, I really need this right now. So don't expect people to read your mind. Communicate your time frames for accomplishment clearly in advance. That way no one will be disappointed or frustrated along the way. Number 13, communicate. Now, when someone says communicate, the first thought, the first thing that normally comes to mind is simply one-on-one verbal conversations, either in person or over the telephone. But it can also mean talking to groups of people in meetings or even to a huge audience. It can also mean communicating in writing through letters, memos, newsletters, evaluations, and proposals. Whether you are teleconferencing, speaking to a crowd, leaving a note for your spouse, the important thing to remember is to be clear. Don't expect anyone else to read your mind or understand your buzzwords or colloquialisms. Make sure you are communicating your ideas succinctly and in a way the other person or group can understand. Charles Schwab said, "I will pay more for a man's ability to express himself than for any other quality he might possess." And Mark Shepard of Texas Instruments once said, "By definition, communication means two-way communication. Insecure individuals don't like it. Bosses don't like it. But leaders and innovators do like it. You must become a master communicator to be an effective leader." Number 14, you must be able to communicate in lots of different ways. Through content or what you have to say, through your verbal skills or how you say what you have to say, as well as non-verbally, which means how you look when you say what you have to say. Now, studies conclude that our effectiveness in communicating with others is based on these proportions. Content is 7%. Verbal skills, 38%. Nonverbal skills are 55%. Now, does that surprise you? It does most people. And you know, it's a heck of a thing to find out at this point in your life that what you have to say is just not that important. In fact, it makes up only 7% of our communications. 7% is based on what we really have to say. 93% is based on how we say it and how we look when we say it. To be an effective leader, you must learn how to improve your effectiveness in each area of communications. And there are many good ways and many good sources out there so you can learn these skills. You might try Toastmasters. You might try Dale Carnegie. You might try your local chapter of the National Speakers Association, because some of them offer speaker schools on how to become a better communicator. I also recommend this book, How to Get Your Point Across in 30 Seconds or Less. It's by Milo Frank. You need to buy this book. Anyone in leadership should buy it to improve their communication skills. Lee Iacocca said, you can have brilliant ideas, but if you can't get them across, your ideas won't get you anywhere. And Robert Frost said, half the world is composed of people who have something to say and can't, and the other half who have nothing to say and keep on saying. Number 15, listen. Listen is probably the most overlooked leadership skill and communication skill. Leaders normally have the attitude that it's what they say that is the most important thing. Yet to be a great leader, it is important to understand that it's the information that others have that is really the most important thing. Employees have information that will tell us how to motivate them, stimulate them, and inspire them to action. Customers have the information that will tell us the direction our decisions should take so we can meet and exceed the customer's expectations. And the only way to get this information is to ask good questions and then become really good at listening intently to the feedback that we receive. Dean Rusk said, one of the best ways to persuade others is with your ears, by listening to them. David Schwartz said, big people monopolize the listening. Small people monopolize the talking. Number 16, you got to get out there with them. Tom Peters, who wrote Thriving on Chaos and lots of others, says it all when he said, you should get your MBWA, which means management by walking around. You've got to get out there among your troops. You have to get out there and know how they do their job by seeing them do their job. You have to know what it takes for them to do their job, and you have to show a genuine interest in their job as well as in them. You have to be willing to get out there by their side, to ask good questions about them and their job, and then you have to be willing to listen. Be with them as they answer the telephones, as they handle customer complaints, as they deliver customer service, as they're selling, hanging wire on a pole, packing cases, flipping hamburgers, or whatever. Whatever job it is you are supervising or leading, you must know what the job entails. Now, you don't have to know exactly how to do the job, but you must know what it takes to do the job, what challenges they face. You have to be able to empathize with your people, meet them where they are, and where they are is where they work. According to Peter Drucker, a leader is like a battalion commander who isn't content to read the menus, but insists on going into the mess hall to taste the food himself. Not only does he know more about what's being fed to his subordinates, but he's considered a better leader by his troops. Number 17. People are all different. Every person is unique. You have to understand that employee A cannot be managed in the same way as employee B. Being sensitive to the uniqueness in every person will help you communicate more effectively and get more done through each employee. Many people have enough similar characteristics that they can be grouped into certain categories. Companies have developed testing programs even to help you understand the various types of people you employ. Some may have higher energy levels than others. They may respond to different stimuli. Some are more visual, while others are more audio or kinesthetic. And the more you learn about the different styles of people and understand how to approach individuals as individuals, the better your results will be. So celebrate the differences in your people, and remember, when two people are exactly alike, you have one too many. Number 18, be flexible. A good leader is flexible in dealing with people. Now, since everyone is unique, each person has to be led a little differently. This means you cannot use only one leadership style with every employee if you want to achieve optimum results. For some it will work, but for others it will only serve to alienate them and even demotivate them. You have to meet people where they are in order to lead them where you want them to go. You have to show empathy with their specific needs, their goals and desires, and learn what it takes to create an atmosphere where each person is highly motivated. You have to listen, get involved, and communicate effectively. Then you must create an action plan for that person, involving the employee in setting performance goals and even the rewards that mean the most to that individual. As Don Hudson says, you've got to throw different pitches to different batters. And Lee Iacocca said, there are times when even the best manager is like the little boy with the big dog waiting to see where the dog wants to go so he can take him there. Number 19, educate. Educate your people. Provide them with training. Training that will improve their ability to perform and to carry out their assigned tasks. You know, too many leaders have the assumption that everyone already knows what it takes to do the job, and that's just an unfair assumption, especially if they've been hired from another organization. Just because they've been a customer service rep for XYZ company doesn't mean that they know how to be a customer service rep for your company. Titles mean different things to different people and to different companies, so provide training in how you want it to be done, and never assume they already know. This goes back to good communications and laying out expectations clearly in advance. But when we're talking about educating people, we also must provide training in life skills. It's important to have people who know how to set and achieve goals, how to make decisions, how to manage their time, communicate, listen, get along with other people, and how to have a good attitude. These are more important than any of the technical skills they might have. Mediocre leaders train their people to be better employees. Outstanding leaders train their employees to be better people. Andrew Pearson said, to improve a company fast, develop people fast. And Nick Goble said, education is an investment and never an expense. You should invest in your people and help them to become better people, because your business is a reflection of the quality of the people within it. Number 20. Michael LaBeouf said in his powerful book, and you must have this book, GMP, The Greatest Management Principle in the World. He said that what gets rewarded gets done. When your employees accomplish what is expected, you must recognize and reward their efforts if you want to continue getting the type of performance you've received. Recent studies indicate that the number one thing people want from their job is recognition of a job well done. Now, you might be surprised. You might have thought it was money, but it's not money. To a successful leader, you need to celebrate and reward the achievements of your subordinates. And this is not just because you want to have the behavior repeated, but also because you want to become involved in appreciating their accomplishments. Everyone wants to know they are appreciated. They want their accomplishment recognized. They want to be rewarded. Now, this can be done with something as simple as a little note passed to the employee, to announcements in meetings, to newsletter articles, to plaques, books, educational audio tapes, and the list goes on and on and on. Maybe time off. Maybe a dinner out. Maybe a little shopping spree for them at the mall. But the important thing to remember is to acknowledge people's contribution, no matter how you might do it. Your approval is highly desired by your people, and it does motivate them. You'll also be rewarded in turn with continued outstanding performance. Tom Peters and Robert Waterman said, when the number of awards is high, it makes the perceived possibility of winning high as well. And then the average person will stretch to achieve. Number 21. Let me give you a few guidelines for rewarding people. I believe there are five basic guidelines for rewarding people. First, do it immediately. Don't wait. This creates a great impression on the person receiving the praise. Plus, it encourages them to repeat the performance more quickly, which benefits everyone. Next, make the reward very specific. Things like, hey, you're doing a great job here, that's just too general. But a compliment like, I really like how you handled that customer in that situation. You see, that's a lot more specific, and you should point out exactly how they did handle the customer, what they said, exactly what they did. That'll work much better, so make your reward specific. Third, praise publicly as well as privately. People want and need recognition in front of their peers, and it will also set an example for other people to follow. Number four, be creative. Send an I appreciate you because note, or telegram, or hold a surprise party. Traditional letters and plaques are fine, but who needs another plaque? It's the unusual thing that will be remembered. You must also keep your rewards very positive. Something like, why can't you always do this good? You see, that's not a reward, that's a reprimand. Make sure that you reward positively, recognizing only the good in a positive fashion. Number 22, You have to say thank you. Please and thank you were ingrained into us in childhood as the very simplest of courtesies. And yet thank you is an extremely overlooked form of reward and recognition by many managers and leaders. Many think, why should I thank them? That's what they get paid to do. Yeah, you're right. People do get paid to do their job. But if you want above standard performance, then some recognition for even doing their job, well, it's just in order. This is the easiest reward you can offer as a leader, a simple verbal thank you to your employees. And be very specific. I've already mentioned that. The more specific you are, the more meaningful the thank you will be. So say it often. Make it specific. Say it in person. Say it in writing. But no matter how you say it, just say it. Number 23. Write it down. Recognize a job well done in writing. While it's important to say thank you in person and recognize people in public, writing it down will somehow make it more permanent. Written thank yous and rewards also tend to grow in the mind of the person. They can refer back to the written documentation often and recall how they felt when they first got the letter or that certificate of appreciation or that handwritten note. One of the most powerful forms of recognizing employees that I found is with a very simple slip of paper, not too big, that only says, I appreciate, with a blank, because, with several blank lines. Have them pre-printed, maybe with your company logo on them, and then use them to reward small but specific accomplishments by your people. Pass them out so everyone can use them. Set the example by using them first, though, to show them how they should be used. And as those start to get used and passed around your organization, you will be amazed at the impact they will have on performance. People will tend to keep these little slips of paper in order to improve their self-confidence and build their own self-esteem. In my businesses in the past, I've even held an I appreciate whoever day and ask everyone to contribute an I appreciate slip to that person on their day. And then you pass around the privilege of being appreciated. Give everyone the opportunity to get written positive feedback on their performance by other people. It's a very effective way to appreciate others. And it always makes you feel good when someone says something nice to you. Number 24, results. You know, like it or not, you always do get results. And results are everything. When it's all said and done, they don't ask how. They ask how many. You've set expectations for what you want from your employees. You and your employees have set and attacked very specific goals. Goals that are achieved and called results. And that's what business is all about. That's what life is all about. Results. Achieving desired results quickly, profitably, and accurately. So be sure to set your goals and objectives in ways that can be measured. How many sales you want to close? How many new clients do you want? What amount of profit do you desire? How many hours should be invested? And what productivity levels you need to achieve? Then measure to see if you've accomplished what you set out to do. Inspect what you expect. Track your progress. Find out what's being done. Focus on accomplishment, not activity. What you do is of little or no consequence. What you get done is everything. As Robert Henry, a friend of mine who is a humorist, said, it is possible to spend your time working efficiently on unimportant problems, which even if solved, will bring no glory to you and no profit to your company. That's important to remember. We have to spend our time improving our results because results are everything. Number 25. A while back, I did a senior management conference for a state banking association, and I asked them this question. If you, as the president of your bank, left today on vacation for the next 2 weeks, and the janitor of your bank also left today on vacation for the next 2 weeks, at the end of the 2 weeks, who will have been missed the most? Well, you know the answer to that, and they knew the answer to that too, and believe me, they didn't like the answer. Now, why is that? Because most leaders, now let me back that up, I won't say most, I will say some leaders sit in their corner office with all the plans, all the numbers, all those piles of paper, and they think that is being an effective leader. You can't communicate, listen, set realistic expectations, or get good results if you don't participate in the action. I've already talked about the importance of managing your business by walking around. I'm also talking about participating. Because a participative leadership style doesn't mean you have to give up your role of authority, and some people think that it does. However, it simply means that you get involved with the people doing the work, learn what it takes to get it done, and empower employees to take responsibility for the work. The result is creative employees who will go the extra mile because they know you are involved and they know you care. Philip Oxley, who is president of Tenneco, says people who are going to be good managers need to have practical understanding of the crafts in their business. A practical understanding means simply that you are out there and you know what it takes to get the job done. And the only way to do that is by participating. If you're going to be missed, you will be missed because you're involved. Number 26, delegate. You've heard it before. I know you have. If you want it done right, then do it yourself. Well, that's impossible. In fact, that's stupid. There's no way for you as a busy leader to do everything yourself. While you may be tempted, there's just no way. There's not enough time. There's not enough energy. And that's not the sign of a good leader. So you must be able to delegate. And it can be hard for leaders to delegate because they probably have the experience, skills, and talent to actually do the job themselves. They think that to delegate would mean to abdicate responsibility and maybe even sacrifice some quality along the way. Others don't like to delegate because someone else might be able to do it better than they could, and then that would diminish their authority or their control. That's just the sign of an insecure person and certainly an insecure leader. Good leaders hire people smarter than they are, or train people to do a better job than they would ever be able to do. And that proves that the leader is really the smartest of all. Benjamin Franklin says, "When you do for a man what he can and should do for himself, you do him a great disservice." And James Everett said, "Proper delegation is an indication of a manager's trust and faith in his people." Number 27, let me give you some rules for delegation. Just ask yourself these four very simple questions. Number one, can it be done faster by someone else? Number two, can it be done better by someone else? Number three, can it be done by someone who likes doing it more than I do? And number four, can it be done cheaper by someone else? If the answer is yes to any of these questions, then by all means, let them do it. Here's a bonus. When at all possible, only do what you uniquely were hired to do. You were hired because you had something special to bring to your job. Do that special thing and let others do theirs. Number 28, step back. There will come a time you need to step back. Allow people to do their own work. You've educated them. You've given them the skills. You've worked with them to set expectations. You've encouraged them. You've recognized. You've rewarded their accomplishment. They've proved they can do it. So step back and get out of their way. And there are lots of benefits to stepping back. One, you're showing confidence in your people and trust that they really can do it by themselves. Two, you get to have some time to regroup and rejuvenate yourself. Everyone needs time to relax and to become creative again and to get better. You as the leader need this more than anyone. Take a few precious moments and educate yourself by listening to an audio tape or watching a good video tape or reading a good book. Learn how to take a mini vacation in your mind by meditating to reduce some stress. Take an hour off and go play for a while. Take a walk. But it's important to learn to step back in order to avoid burnout. As Jürgen Moltmann said, where freedom of play has been lost, the world turns into a desert. You need to step back and give yourself some time to play and rejuvenate and become creative again so you can really maintain effective leadership. Plus, it does allow people to step out on their own and use the skills that you have taught them to do. And they will feel more trusted and more confident in their job. number 29. You're right. You know, as a leader, you have certain rights. You always have the right to evaluate the performance of a subordinate. Always. You're paying for their work. This is one of the things you are also paid to do, to evaluate the performance of the people who work for you. While you always have the right to evaluate the performance of your people, you have no right to evaluate people. Some leaders overstep their boundaries and attack individuals. That's not fair. Your role is to get things done through the actions of other people. So evaluate other people's actions. You are paying for other people's performance. That is what you have the right to evaluate. You do not have the right to evaluate who people are. I like the Chinese proverb that says, "Do not forget little kindnesses and do not remember little faults." That's good when it comes to evaluating people. Always pay attention to what's going on with the performance of your people. However, please never get confused. And this one is abused so many times. We think that we own the people. You don't. You aren't paying people to be people. Who they are is reflected in their results. I will agree with that. But you only have the right in business to evaluate results. If you don't like how people are, then train them to be better at who they are. That is your responsibility to them. Number 30, never tolerate mediocrity. I believe mediocrity in business is really your worst enemy. And if you tolerate mediocrity in one employee, it has a negative impact on all of your employees. The good employees will say, "Look, they're getting by with it, so I don't have to do as good a job as I've been doing, because they're not and no one cares." Then your best performance will start giving you mediocre behavior. And tolerating mediocrity will also allow your worst performers to say, "Why should I improve? They let me get by with it the way it is. I have no reason to get any better." Mediocrity makes everyone a loser. The biggest loser is the customer, because the customer does not get the best of the employee or of your company. The company then loses by wasting money on mediocre performance. The good performer loses by watching a mediocre performer get by with it and then developing a similar behavior. Mediocre performers lose because they aren't doing their best and know that they're stealing from the company, which affects how they feel about themselves and also affects their overall results. And also you lose, the leader. You lose because you lose the respect of the good employees and the mediocre employees, and your customer, as well as your company. Charles Knight Emerson said, "Set and demand standards of excellence. Anyone who accepts mediocrity in school and job and life is a guy who compromises. And when the leader compromises, the whole organization compromises." The last principle to be an effective leader says that good leaders know when to say goodbye. There comes a time when the leader must just cut people loose and send them on to what I call a career enlargement opportunity. Some people need to be dehired. If you can't say fire, tell them you're dehiring them. You tolerate mediocrity or poor performance, and that won't do anyone any good. We've already talked about that. People must have the ability to do the job or the desire to do the job. If neither of those exist, then get them a new job. If not in your organization, then in another company where they can match their abilities and desires to that of that company. Good leaders have to be able to say goodbye. While it can be difficult, it is also a necessary part of leadership. You've got to be able to cut people loose. If you hang on to people too long, it will cost you money. I like what Harvey McKay said. It isn't the people you fire who will make your life miserable. It's the people you don't fire. And Arthur Bolger said, "Managers often avoid firing because it's unpleasant. But getting rid of the bad performers is as good a tonic for the company as a reward can be for a star performer."
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Grandy & Associates on the World Wide Web. Our website provides a detailed schedule of coming full-day seminars. Our address is www.grandyassociates.com, and it is also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandyassociates.com. One last comment. If you would like a free copy of Grandy & Associates' newest catalog of products and services, simply give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.